We're doing it live.
Right, this is Pure Decking for November the 22nd, 1982. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I am Morps, and tonight I have Syntax and Suave Lemon, and we're expecting Sardonyx to show up, you know, any time now, whenever he gets done stuffing his gourd. What's up, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
So, now that we've done the fake intro, because, you know, no, it's not like we've actually been talking to each other for half an hour, so. I don't even try anymore. It's just like, it's like, yep, there's our nice and fake intro. We gotta just record it, you know? Just record the intro. There's making dinner, sorry. Too bad. Answer your fucking call. No, he's not. He's not going to answer.
No.
He says, "I'm making dinner. I'm not answering." Well, we tried. He'll just. What's going to happen is he's just going to pop in at some point, and
start screaming.
Yeah, basically.
Well, that works.
Well, you know, whatever makes you happy, I guess. So, or he's going to answer and then just wait. Sorry, are you there? No, he just answered and he's not actually going to say anything. Or he's muted himself. Who knows? So this is the Making Fun of Sarge show now, and right, so I have no station news. I have nothing terribly interesting, so we're just going to get straight into it. And this one's from PC Mag. Sexting is about to get a lot harder in Pakistan. The Pakistan Telecommunication Authority has handed down a ban on 1,600 terms and phrases it has deemed obscene, including the word harder for one. Carriers were given the list on November the 14th with a letter telling them they have 7 days to block the words on their networks or face legal action. Words on the list, which have been floating around on Twitter, run the gamut from barf to Jesus Christ to backdoor to do me. And there are more than, there's all kinds of stuff on the list. I've actually got a link to the list right here in the show notes, so that'll be posted when we post the show. And they're very creative, actually. It's like for government officials, it's like they have a page and a half of words that start with ass. I mean, we need to reference this list when we're doing I Have Nothings, to be honest.
Oh, you know what? I was totally uninterested in that list until you mentioned that. And now I think this is a beautiful thing.
I mean, I just want new ways to curse at people. So,
they have monkey crotch.
Who sat down and came up with all these words? That's what I want to know. Did they have like a big
Pakistani
group of
government officials
just like sitting around at a table browsing 4chan looking for words to ban?
Oh, Jesus, this is awesome. This is the most epic
plug in the dolphin. But, you know, like, the problem with this is, like, sure, they've totally banned all kinds of words, like, you know, gangbang or jab.
So what happens when you just misspell them?
Well, no, the thing is, people are just going to come up with new words. Pretty soon, they're going to have to ban the name and the classification of pretty much every fruit and vegetable, pretty much any piece of food, really, because, you know, you can use them in dirty ways.
God, yeah. They out... Wait, they're banning breast job. And breast. What happens if you need, you know,
well, what if you're trying to say, what if you're trying to tell somebody, hey, my mom has breast cancer? Nope, you've been blocked for, you know, does the party van show up? I mean,
they banned Budweiser.
Well, they've got a bunch of Christian terms on there too, because I guess
they banned Wigger.
Okay, here's what we need to do from now on. Whenever we need, we should start naming our shows and just start going down the list. Because they've already got it written out there for us. That's 1,600 shows.
Limey.
What the fuck is Carruth?
Well, they've got other they've got some other languages on there besides English.
G-Unit.
Well, I'm just thinking. I'm just thinking. If they're trying to avoid sexting, what's to stop me from writing the word down with Sharpie and taking a picture of it? Because then their text filtering can't catch that.
Wait. Even a step better. What's going to stop them from taking a picture of my penis and sending it?
Again, point taken. And yeah. you know, picture of penis. It is a universal language. So,
yeah. Fuck is a Dixie dyke?
You know what? I'm not too sure, but I would like to know.
I wouldn't.
I don't know. I'm seriously thinking about putting it into like the Wikipedia, but then I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah, because then whatever the description is, you got to look at that picture of Jimmy Wales. Right next to a picture of whatever that is. That's probably not what you want.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got to say, there's some pretty creative words in here. And, you know, any time in the future that I ever need, like, a online username for somewhere, I'm just going to refer to this list.
Yeah, you know, just get something that's, hey, you know, they'll give you a random number.
You know, this would be something good to add to your password lists for, like, when you're doing brooding.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet some of these, you know, people use as their password thinking, oh, that'll never show up. So.
Hostage. Hostage is on the ban list.
So how do you make your demands?
Well, yeah. Well, now see, and I'm wondering, okay, all this is supposed to be for sexting. They're either my kind of people or really fucked up if they're using hostage in sexting.
Or sniper. Sniper is also one of the words.
Oh, Jesus.
So how do you believe that there's a sniper on the roof or that you are the sniper? I mean, or what if sniper is the safety word that your hostage has to scream whenever they've had enough? I mean.
Oh, God, they banned Kmart.
Not Kmart.
Oh, we need RU on for this list. We should Suave, you need to copy the link out of my show notes and just save this again for I Have Nothing. Because we'll have a completely different crowd on and they can again, you know, just have fun with this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
Jesus, this is...
You know, I will not be insulted if you copy my links for use in I Have Nothing.
All right. Yeah, no, I'm definitely doing that.
I'm done for the rest of the show because I'm just going through this list and giggling.
Yeah. It's really bad.
Well, while Syntax drools at the list, sorry, are you around? Did you come back?
I did. I'm here. Hello, everybody.
He has food in his mouth or a cock. I'm not sure which.
Hello. Food.
He's got something off that list in his mouth.
He does. Yeah,
I
definitely.
I probably do. Fucking yeah. Pakistanis won't leave me alone.
So, all right, what we got? Next one here is from Wall Street Journal. This one's
fuck
pretty
the Wall Street Journal.
Well, this one's actually pretty cool. A judge has declared that warrantless cell phone tracking is unconstitutional.
Fuck, about time.
In a succinct one-page ruling, U.S. District Court Judge Lynn N. Hughes, who is now a hero, of the Southern District of Texas, declared that the law authorizing the government to obtain cell phone records without a search warrant was unconstitutional. The records would show the date, time, call number, and location that the telephone call was made, Judge Hughes wrote in the decision, dated November the 11th. These data are constitutionally protected from this intrusion. So basically he's saying that going in and getting all the cell phone data, which like Verizon has a portal and they just charge a standard fee. I think Google has one too, that they give law enforcement so that they can just go in there and punch in stuff and pull it out.
Really?
Yeah. You didn't know that Verizon had that portal?
No, I didn't.
Yes, they did.
I didn't know that either. That's fucked up.
Fuck, I guess I have to switch my fucking phone carrier.
I forget. I think AT&T has one too now, so, you know.
I'm pretty sure most of them do.
Actually, like, I think AT&T has an entire building that they just, you know, pipe everything that they let the DOJ look through.
Well, see, what's really bad is I remember back a couple of months ago,
during the riots in London, where the British government said, "Hey, BlackBerry, give us all of your data," and BlackBerry went, "Okay, here."
Well, the winning quote here is about midway through the article, because I'm not going to read the whole thing. During the argument, Chief Justice John Roberts said to Michael Dorbin, Deputy Solicitor General of the Justice Department, "If you win this case, then there's nothing to prevent the police or the government from monitoring 24 hours a day the public movement of every citizen in the United States." He leaves out the part with a cell phone. But, yeah, essentially we've actually got a judge who gets it.
Do you have a... You need a hallelujah button, Morps. You need to set that up.
Yeah, I probably do. Well, how about this? Does that work?
Sure.
No.
Yeah.
No. Okay. I've got another one here. Does this one work?
The Enrichment Center once again reminds you that Android Hell
is
a real
either.
Place where you will be sent at the first sign of defiance.
You can't stop it, can you?
Not really. Now that would work if the decision had went the other way.
Yes.
So. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I do need a hallelujah button. Somebody get on that.
Yep.
Or send me one, or I don't know. I've got some time on my hands this weekend. Maybe I'll come up with some stuff. Let's see here. Next one up is from Extreme Tech. And wow, we're not going very fuck it. We're not going to take music break. We're just going to go. See how long the show ends up. Well, I didn't research any music. All I have is a Tax album, and I'm not supposed to be playing much off of that yet. So, yeah.
Play some Screen Savior.
Yeah, we can play some Screen Savior.
There you go.
So we'll do that.
Just go on to that one website that plays the videos. God, I am way too hungover. And just hit random.
That will end well.
It could.
Oh, somebody's sending me a hallelujah. Let's see if I can get that in quick enough to drop in the soundboard here. So, nope, that's not coming in very quickly at all. But that's okay, because it can replace this in the soundboard.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dateline NBC.
So, we'll put that in place on the soundboard.
Why do you even have that?
Well, for a minute there, I thought we were going to have somebody else on the show. So.
Oh, okay. Chris Hansen?
No.
Uh-oh.
It's a bad joke. Never mind. Anyways. So, next one up. This one's cool. This is from Extreme Tech. I like this story. Yeah, there's a study that put out that the title is "The Growing Impact of Full Disk Encryption on Digital Forensics." It illustrates the study that CSI teams are having in obtaining digital data to build a solid case against criminals. According to the researchers, one of which is a member of U.S. CERT, the U.S. government's primary defense against internet and digital threats, there are three main problems with full disk encryption. First, evidence-gathering goons can turn off a computer for transportation without realizing that it's encrypted and thus can't get back at the data. Unless the arrestee gives up the password, which most of them don't have to do, at least in the States. Second, if the analysis team doesn't know that the disk is encrypted, they waste hours trying to read something that's, not readable. And in the case of hardware-level disk encryption, tampering with the device can trigger self-destruction. And just to point out, I've got devices that cover all three of those. So,
yes.
I love my iron keys, man. Those are awesome flash drives.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm particularly interested in the self-destructing ones.
Yeah, iron key does that, too. If you try to punch in a password on my 4-gig iron key 10 times, it actually burns the chip out. It's pretty cool.
That's crazy.
Well, it's not like you see smoke coming from it or anything. It just destroys the chip. It won't read.
Yeah, basically, it overvoltages it for a very... very, very short amount of time, and you're done.
Yeah, it's the kind of damage that, if you took a knife and scraped it, you might be able to see it, but you'd probably need a pretty good lens.
Yeah.
But anyways, the paper goes on to list some ways to deal with the issues. Basically, better awareness at the evidence gathering stage, ripping data before the machines, you know, not turning off machines. That way, if they are encrypted, you have a chance to copy things while it's still got the key in RAM. You know, maybe doing things while the system's live to pull the key out of RAM. Yeah, basically, they're saying research is needed to develop new techniques and technology for breaking or bypassing full disk encryption. Unfortunately, because it's the government making this study, we all know that their solution is not to solve the problem, but simply to tell the problem that it's illegal and to go away.
Yeah.
So how long before they just banned full disk encryption? So.
Well, like we were talking about earlier before we were on, there's probably a bill being written now. So sometime around 2014, it should be done being written.
Yeah. So you know what? Everybody just might want to pull down a copy of TrueCrypt and its source and
keep it forever.
Just set that aside somewhere. Put it on a flash drive, lock it in a box, and set it aside. You might need it someday.
Yeah.
But
am I the only one that has like a safety deposit box in a bank full of flash drives?
Well, my safety deposit box in the bank doesn't have flash drives in it, but you know, actually DVDs.
Oh yeah, I have flash drives and one little external hard drive.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So.
Off-site data storage.
Best way to be sure.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
So.
As many copies as you can possibly make.
As long as they're all encrypted.
Yeah. Yeah. And burying it in an ammo can in your backyard is not off-site data storage.
No, but. Possibly storing the ammo cam, a nice, tight, waterproof container of some sort with the data, you know, the flash drive or whatever in it, in the bumper of your car could be off-site. I knew somebody who did that.
Good point.
They took one of those Loctite containers that's like for camping,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, hot glued some really strong neodymium magnets and stored stuff. Like a spare set of keys, flash drive, a few other things in the bumper of their car.
That's really good until A, somebody, your car gets stolen.
And B, some jackass announces that you're doing this on the internet.
Or C, you rear-end someone.
Well, he did it mostly because he was locking his keys out of his car all the time. But
oh, okay.
This is also a while back. His car is a Volkswagen. So it was a while back.
What color and year, please? In what city?
Red 79 in Louisville. So.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
I don't know if he's still doing that or not, but.
If he is, someone should warn him. Because.
The internet is coming.
Yeah. All two of our listeners, anytime they're in Louisville and they see an old Volkswagen, they're going to be like,
digging around in the bumper.
Behind the bumper.
Oh, wonder how many people are going to jail for that one. So, oh, this got done. This is a little delayed. Let's see. Oh, it's not even set up. You're going to hear me clicking through my, you'll hear it on the stream and in the recording, but they won't hear it on Skype. Me clicking through folders to get the received file. Here it is. Here we go. We're a little late on that.
Yay.
Okay. We'll keep that handy. I'm sure that'll be useful for something.
For something.
Maybe. If we ever get a good story again.
Let's see here. Next up, this one's from Ars Technica. This is cool. Yeah, with the SOPA going on, there's this group that has come out to build a new top-level domain outside of ICANN called .bit. And it's currently using proxies, some cryptography, and a small collection of DNS servers to create a section of new domains. So let's see. So far, they've got over 4,000 domains registered with .bit, and it's literally .bit. And it's a virtual top-level domain. These domains are only visible to people who use a proxy service that draws additional information from their distributed database or one of the two public DNS servers. It's not exactly a darknet. They're calling it a dimnet. And there's no... This is all pure DNS. This is all to get around protect IP, mostly, because I think SOPA's got other things in it about dealing with people getting around their filtering. But essentially, the cool part here is they've co-opted the technology that was invented for Bitcoin.
Oh.
And they're using the same style of encryption and encrypted tokens and distributed databasing to do a DNS system. And then you can mine, they're calling them name coins, but they're basically Bitcoins. You can mine them, you can buy them, you know, just the same way as you get Bitcoins, and use those to buy database space in their DNS servers. Now, because there's only two public DNS servers and there's a handful of proxies, you're still back to the same basic problem of your ISP is blocking shit. They just add these to the list. But the really cool bit, I thought, was that they were co-opting and doing the Bitcoin technology and trying something different with it.
I love it when people do that, when they're like, okay, oh, look, something old that we can use in a new way. I love that.
I love that, too. So, I don't know, what were you going to say, Sard?
I was just going to agree. I mean, that's freaking cool. I like seeing, I guess they're kind of sticking it to the man type thing. Are you going to block these top level domains? Then we're just going to make our own. But like you said, I mean, their ISPs could block those, their DNS servers. But hopefully if it continues along the Bitcoin or the encryption method, you know, if it's like Tor, then hopefully anyone can pop up a mirror of that.
No,
so then there's no way.
It's not exactly like Tor. Although you're right, there's no reason somebody couldn't mirror their DNS space. But
yeah,
then
I'm just thinking, you know, we could propagate, and then it, you know, there'd be no way of stopping it because it would be everywhere.
Yeah, they're already working with a distributed database and series of proxies, and it's pretty cool. Right now, according to the article, it costs 1.6 name coins for a DNS registration. And the registration isn't associated with a name, address, or phone number or any of that kind of stuff. Instead, it goes straight to the identity you set up for working with Namecoin. You know, just like with Bitcoin, you would make a wallet. It's essentially the same technology. And it's all just a JSON formatted update request. They map it in their database, and you can get a .bit address.
Does that require an actual physical address and name and all that? Or
No. That's essentially the point. It's tied to your cryptographic identity. So you've probably got an email. You probably end up with an email associated with it somewhere, but it's not officially like it is in the DNS system.
Right. That's what I'm just wondering, because I freaking hate that about how, you know, it requires practically your firstborn to register a domain name. You have to put all your information on there.
Yeah.
If this was a cool way around that.
Of course, you can lie in that database.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Lie. Who hasn't lied to a DNS when you're doing something stupid?
Honestly, I wasn't sure. Hey, is that common practice? Or
yes, it's very common practice.
I mean, I personally have never done that.
I have.
Oh, God, I have.
Lie in new DNS databases, lie on Twitter, lie on Facebook. Anyways.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, I've signed up for a new forum, and it wanted my first and last name. So I was like, okay, my first name is B, my last name is Tard. I thought it was fucking funny.
Well, you see, now we've got this great list of 1,600 words that you can just, you know, whenever you need a name, just pick two of those.
Perfect. Like I said, we need to get a random number generator between one and there, and just go and go. Haha, this is who I am today.
That's you know, that wouldn't be too hard to script up with some Python and just that list pulled down as a text file. That would be, I might do that just for fun. Put that together. Just, you know, gives you two random words off the list. Thank you, Pakistani government, for giving us our new fake ID system.
Yes.
Okay. It is time for some Digital Dojo. If anybody wants to give me very racist, bad kung fu sounds.
Wah!
I can't. Sard, I can't find the. Where'd the thing go?
I've lost push the thing. Button. Push the button.
I'll push the button. I just gotta find the right one.
Which?
Me love you long time.
There we go.
Perfect.
Now that we've offended anybody with higher than average cheekbones, let's see. Yeah. Yeah, I don't speak slanty-eyed, so I don't care what they write about me. Now, I'm not a racist, but I pretend to be one on the internet. So
they're fucking squiggly-ass letters and shit.
Well, yeah, now apparently, I just found out today, people lie on the internet. I thought it was just like TV. Everything on there is true.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, say that again, Sarge, just in case RU can't clip it out of that last one.
No.
So first one up we've got, this is a pretty, it's coming off a pretty interesting blog called ghostinthelab.wordpress.com. Problem is half of it's in Russian of some sort, and I can't really read that. But
you can try.
Badly. But the bits they do have in English are very cool. And what I'm linking to specifically is a couple of posts where he has posted some virtual machines, which are realistic targets for practicing penetration testing. And the problem is his hosting has currently got bandwidth exceeded, so I haven't pulled them down to really look at them. But I like the concept. It's like, here's some target boxes, have fun.
Okay. I see a big problem with this.
What's that?
What's to stop him from whenever you trying to access that, him then loading shit? Or just going nuts.
Exactly. Or what if they have a freaking Trojan that's just going to spam your local network or something like that?
So you would You practice doing pen testing and running unknown software on production networks? Is that what you guys are telling me? Because I usually load them up in a, I load them up in a test bed that's usually not even connected to the internet. So if it starts doing shit, it'll show up on the packet filter, and I just go no click. But I like the concept.
Granted, so. Yeah, that's kind of cool. Does he go into? You said he couldn't read most of it, but does he go into any detail of as far as? I mean, are these just like partially patched systems with some common corporate?
They're supposed to be realistic targets. Apparently, the blog was running a. Let me pull the link up again. The blog was running a contest a little while back, and it's called Hackademic. Root this box, and it's an online capture the flag that they were running. And the target, it was download the target and get root.
That's cool. Yeah. That's a cool idea. I mean, there was another one a long time ago, web page where it was like hack this web page or something like that,
where you have to look through
the source code and find the password. And there's a little link here that you're kind of supposed to see. It's got that kind of same type of game thing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like the concept. I like people putting out stuff. And like I said, if the site wasn't down, I would have pulled them down and saw what they were actually doing. But you do bring up a good point about watch out what you're pulling down and using. This came up a little while back, actually. Amazon, you know how they've got their EC2 system? They, and their cloud service. There were a lot of people putting out EC2 Amazon images of various Linux builds, and people were figuring out after the fact that the authors left their SSH keys in them. So, somebody would put out, like, here's a web server that's already got, web application and database already installed in it. Have fun! And it's like it's already got an SSH key in it. Well, SSH isn't going to trip anything in an IDS box or even on most log systems. So it's like oh, I'm just SSHing into admin the box. Yeah, no big deal. I'll key log in. Okay, whatever. So
that's awesome.
So, yeah, that one's kind of on the older side, but I think it's hilarious.
Definitely hilarious. So.
This next one is this one's fun. This is it's mytty.org/WAFPF, and it's a web application finger printer, and it's a little Ruby script. It uses SQLite database. It's essentially it runs a scan on a web application and gives a fingerprint of the application. This is so you can go through and identify what the application is after the fact. You check it against the database, it's WordPress version whatever, or front page, or front page is a set of extensions, not an actual application. You know what I mean. It's just a way of identifying what the applications are. So If you need a fingerprint, you can do that. I thought it was a handy tool. So
that's kind of cool. So you can fingerprint and just verify that it's the original source code.
Right. This is something you're going to use in conjunction with other tools. Like it'll let you fingerprint and prove that, okay, you're running this web app and we know it's vulnerable to X, Y, and Z, or its configuration files are commonly here. A lot of times, especially with things like CMSs, it can be a bit of a pain to determine what the web app is that's actually generating the code. And so something like this could be handy for figuring out what somebody's running if you need to gain access or just want to see how they're doing it.
Huh. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's cool. If you just want to see how they're doing it, because gaining access is illegal.
Yes, because we care about that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I've been working on some of the scripts for the new Agent Paranoia stuff. I've got some friends helping me with that, and we're totally going off the deep end with that. It's going to be great.
Nice.
So, we're going to have to put a really big disclaimer at the beginning of those because it's going to be like, yeah, do not do anything in these videos at all. You will go to jail, and we will laugh at
you. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've been having some friends help me with some scripts on that, and it's just a whoo. It's like, yeah, so if you want to hack a bank and steal money, this is, yeah, that was actually in one of the scripts. I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. So,
yes, that's a win.
So, this last one up, this is in the same vein as the Raspberry Pi, which, you know, we brought that up once and then Heavy never shut up about it. So, but this one's from Fixit Tech, and they're calling it the Cotton Candy. It's a USB-sized stick computer device. Essentially, they stuck a quad-core cell phone processor in a USB stick and put an HDMI port on the other end of it. So you can hook it up to TVs, anything that'll take HDMI, and get an Android screen on it. They don't have their price listed. I'm betting it's going to be more than the Raspberry Pi. But
it is. They were estimating around $200 for it. I'm glad you grabbed this one. I forgot to send it to you. I saw it earlier this week. It's cool, dude. It's like, it's literally a computer on a thumb drive. It has a freaking powered by USB, and you just would plug it into the back of the monitor, and you got a freaking computer. Yeah, I mean, it would work great, I think, as a thin client, especially.
Yeah. I'm really impressed. What sort of inputs does it have?
It's USB, so I think it'll take probably.
Oh, just.
Well, it looks like it's running Android. So, you know, if you want to hook keyboard, mouse, touch, whatever to it.
Fair enough.
So,
and it looks like it's all done through Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. I don't think there's somewhere you can plug into it.
Well, I think it's supposed to have a host device of some sort.
Yeah, because it needs to get power from something, and I'm guessing you don't get that through the HDMI port.
No, it's through USB.
Yeah.
The article I was reading is definitely USB, so you could probably hook up a USB hub to it, obviously, and then have multiple ports.
Ooh, and no, have it powered even better. It. You know, the little, because, you know, everyone has a USB-powered cell phone now. You get one of the, like my stereo in my car has a USB port on the outside. So I plug it into that.
Yeah, that'll work. Well, I'm guessing it's probably going to have some sort of a host, like sled or something you can plug it into to get it working with, give you some, you know, like a developer breakout kit or something so you can at least get started with it and then, you know, whatever you want to hook it up to. So I thought it was cool.
That is cool. I really like that.
So you saw somewhere where it's going to be like $200?
Yeah, that's the reasonable. Article I was reading, it was somewhere around there. They were kind of complaining because they're saying, well, you know, tablets in the future, or some tablets are already at $200. Why not get a tablet, blah, blah, blah. But well, I still think it's freaking cool.
Looking at this here, like it's got a gig of RAM, and it's got the Cortex A9 1.2 gigahertz processor. It's not a dual core, but it is one of the faster Cortex processors. If you were to look at a smartphone with those capabilities,
Wait a minute. I've actually got the link I have in the show notes is to the product page, by the company that makes it.
Yeah.
And they've got here, one of them is the, I see where that's coming from. Because one of them, they've got two different listing here. I guess they got two different units. One of them's the Cortex you're talking about. The other's a quad core.
Oh, really?
Yeah, ARM Mali. Oh, I see where I got confused. That's the graphics chip.
It's a graphics, yeah.
Okay. Never mind, continue. I'm wrong.
But yeah. Plus on top of that, it's got a graphics chip that handles 1080p. So if you had a cell phone that had those capabilities, you're probably looking at like $400 or $500 minimum. Just because this doesn't have a screen or a battery, they're able to bring it down. But like, it's got some decent specs on it for such a small device, and I think $200 is more than reasonable.
Yeah, they've got some.
Yeah,
I'm sitting here looking at it, and on their page, they've got some use cases. And if you look at the monitor they've got it hooked to, they've got some sort of a little host sled with a bunch of wires coming off it, one of them going to a touchpad. And it's probably a hub of some sort back there. It's hard to see. The pictures are kind of small. But this is they have on here that it runs Android and Ubuntu.
Oh, that's excellent.
And it looks like they've got a picture plugging it into laptops and running the thing just virtual. It's probably got like a virtual box or something in it, or QMU, and just, you know, run the operating system straight from the flash device. So.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome. And you are right.
It has
a virtualization client for Windows, Linux, Mac, and embedded.
Yeah, and you're right. It does have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth in it, so I would guess you could get your keyboard and a touchpad hooked up to it via Bluetooth or your phone. Use that for controlling it.
Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I think one of those little monitors has a touchscreen phone just sitting there.
That could be.
A couple of them. It looks like it's an iPod Touch.
Yeah.
So. Which would be perfect because, you know, like a little something like that. Even if you just hop on eBay and go buy some like shitty multiple years old used Windows Mobile touchscreen. You can stick those up to a computer and use it as a touchscreen input device via Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like you can get anything for like a couple bucks, really.
Okay. This is actually getting cooler and cooler and cooler the more I sit and think about it because, you know, someone stops you somewhere and it's like, no, it's got me an iPod and a flash drive and...
You know, especially if they've got a little cap you can put over the ends of it so it doesn't look like, you know, this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, ta-da, look at me. I got me a little, you know, computer running Ubuntu. And now you've been owned.
The real question, can I put Backtrack on it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew that was the next question to come up. Can I run Metasploit on it?
Oh, you can you can definitely run Metasploit, but Backtrack has some other tools in it that are kind of a pain in the butt to move around. And whereas, yes, I have sat down and built the Arch system that had most of that stuff in it. It took for fucking ever. It's like, you know what? I've got stuff to do. I'm just going to use Backtrack. It's like, I don't have time.
I'm just comparing the Cotton Candy to the Raspberry, and they don't even compare at all as far as like processing capability. The Raspberry is running an ARM 11 700 megahertz and 128 or 256 megabytes of RAM. That's it.
Yeah, so this is the same. It's the same concept as the Raspberry. They're just putting better hardware in it.
Yeah, and you know, in my experience with devices like this, don't cheap out. Get something that can handle what you want to do. You know, like I've cheaped out on a tablet before, for example, and you know,
I remember you weren't very happy with it.
Well, yeah, it's just too slow, and everything just feels clunky because it's too slow. It can't handle.
Well, although correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't part of the goal of the Raspberry Pi to hit a specific price point?
Yeah,
that's exactly what I was just gonna say. Like, these have two different use cases. Raspberry Pi is for development. You can throw it in, build something, throw one in, and then leave it and not have to salvage it because it's a $200 part and a $5 toy or whatever you built. You can just leave it in there.
Absolutely. But like, I just have these visions of a wearable computer in my head pretty much. And, you know, I just want small form factor. I actually want really good specs. But Raspberry Pi was the first thing that looked like it had anything even remotely usable in a really small form factor. So I'm just really excited that we've got another small form factor. It's even smaller And
okay, so I've got your concept for you right here.
All
right. You know, you take the guy. You know, first you chop off your arm so you can get that that prosthetic arm that had the smartphone dock in it.
Yes.
Okay. Then you make a belt out of as many of these things as it takes to fill the belt.
Yes.
And you know, just a heads up display, and you're good to go.
I think this is a wonderful idea.
Beowulf cluster of these little arm cortex processors.
Yeah, and then you would have to. Oh no. Even better, Toyota makes, it's still a concept, but it's called the iDrive. It basically looks like a chair, kind of a mecha looking chair. Has two joysticks, but it has a smartphone dock on one side, mm-hmm. and on the other is this like, I think it's a 6-inch display. It's not real big. But it's already set up with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and all that. And so all we have to do is just get a bunch of these and Beowulf it into that. You now have a 60-mile-an-hour wheelchair that's a – and it already has the heads-up display on it. Yeah. No, that's the way to do it. That way you wouldn't need arms or legs.
But to be fair, like, you'd be much better off just like hacking together your own chair. I don't know if I'd want to go buy a pre-built one. That takes half the fun out of it.
I want to get one of those mechanized spider chairs and put what he's talking about on it.
Yeah.
That would be scary coming down the road at 60 miles an hour.
You know, I'd settle for one with tank treads.
No, the big dog. That's still by far the creepiest video ever.
Have you seen Pet Man? That's way worse now.
Yeah,
it's a bipedal humanoid that works like Big Dog.
Yeah, and then there's people sitting there kicking the damn thing, and it's like, that's smart. We've made a robot that could potentially kill you, and you're sitting there kicking it.
Yeah. Survival of the fittest.
But no, I'm going to make a prediction within the next 10 to 20 years, we're going to see Big Dog wheelchairs out there. And it will be awesome.
It will scare the children. Okay, so... Yeah, we just barreled right through the break we're supposed to be. So screw it. We're going to go straight into the topic. And I figured it's time. I've been putting it off. We ought to talk about the SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act, because everybody else is getting all bent out of shape about it. So I actually intended to read the bill, and then I started to read the bill and decided that was a bad idea because you know, my eyes crossed and my nose bled a little bit. So what I have here... And it's still, you can see in the show notes, like a page long. It's the summary. I got it off Wikipedia. And let's see. Do-do-do. Introduced on October the 26th. Blah, blah, blah. Here it is. The bill expands the ability of the U.S. law enforcement and copyright holders to fight online trafficking and copyrighted intellectual property and counterfeit goods. How do you have counterfeit goods on the internet? No, seriously. I'm confused about this. This keeps coming up. How the fuck are you counterfeiting something online? It's cheaper to just copy it than it is to make a bad copy on the internet.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. That is...
I mean, copying it, you know, you click one button and it's copied. Making a bad copy means you have to sit there and actually try to make something.
Yeah.
So I don't understand this whole counterfeit good on the internet thing. But anyways, the bill would allow U.S. Department of Justice as well as copyright holders to seek court orders against websites accused of enabling or facilitating copyright infringement. Depending on who requests the court orders, the actions could include barring online advertising and payment facilitators such as PayPal from doing business with the infringing website, barring search engines from linking to the site, so they're making linking illegal, and requiring internet service providers to block access to such sites. The bill would make unauthorized streaming of copyrighted content a felony. That's right, watching a cartoon on YouTube is now a felony on this thing if this thing passes. The bill also gives immunity to internet services that voluntarily take action against websites dedicated to infringement while making liable for damages in any copyright holder who knowingly misrepresents that a website is dedicated to infringement. So, there's more summary here, but if you know, it sounds like Syntax was already ready to go off on what I was saying.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
So, go ahead.
Start. Yeah. Everything I do on the land.
Syntax, we're losing you, man. You're siloing on us.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Give me a second. I have like 73 things open. Let me close some of this shit.
Well, let me keep going here while he does that. Or go ahead, Swaff.
I was just going to say his rage is clouding up his internet connection.
I don't blame him. I'm not very pleased with this either because the ISPs are going to be having to filter this. At the end of the day, this bill is going to make ISPs responsible for bearing the cost of dealing with filtering this crap, which means you are putting a financial liability on a business that has absolutely nothing to do with the copyright infringement, which that's kind of not cool. But anyways, the bill would authorize... wait, I've already read that bit. It's long and all of it reads like the same thing over and over again. The bill would authorize the United States U.S. Department of Justice to seek court orders against websites outside of U.S. jurisdiction accused of infringing on copyright or enabling or facilitating copyright infringement. After delivering a court order, the U.S. Attorney General could require that the U.S.-directed internet service providers add networks such as Google and PayPal or Visa suspend doing websites. Okay, so they're ordering U.S.-based businesses to quit doing business with websites that are found to be infringing and are foreign.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, how the fuck are they going to take down foreign sites?
Well, they can't, but they
yeah,
can.
Yeah, exactly.
They're barring anything internet side from having anything to do with it, including linking to it and hosting the DNS.
Mm-hmm.
Provider suspensions will likely target entire accounts, said the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and the bill's provisions grant them immunity for choking off a site if they have a reasonable belief that a portion of the site enables infringement and give the payment processors a strong incentive to cut them off anyways. The bill establishes a two-step process to seek relief from harm by a site dedicated to infringement. The rights holder must first notify in writing related payment facilitators and ad networks of the identity of the website, who in turn must then forward that notification and cease services to that identified website unless the site provides a counter notification explaining that it is not in violation. The rights holders can then sue for injunctive relief against the site operator if he responds, or if not against the payment. If just as an example, if you find something of yours on the Pirate Bay and you can't get the Pirate Bay to respond because they wouldn't, and they'd laugh at you for trying, you can sue the advertising services of the Pirate Bay for the copyright infringement.
What?
That's what it does. Damages are also not available to the site owner unless a claimant knowingly materially represented it that the law covers the targeted site. So in other words, it's really easy to get shit taken down and really hard to prove that you're not infringing. Great.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. This isn't going to get taken advantage of at all.
Let's see. The second section increases the penalties for streaming video and selling counterfeit drugs. Oh, that's what it is. Selling the counterfeit stuff over the internet.
Oh, so like that really shitty, shitty copy of Cowboy Bebop that I bought off of eBay.
Yeah, yeah, this would make that illegal. But this bill makes unauthorized streaming copyrighted content a felony. Now, I do have a link to the full bill because I'm working from a summary here. But like I said, it is all legalese, and I frankly... realized I was not going to get through that and understand it, you know, an hour before the show. So, but if you do want to look it up, we're going to have the link in the show notes so you can go get the full bill. But yeah, this is insane because you're making the ISPs financially responsible for something they have very little to do with, which is... You know, ISPs are just a common carrier. You're going to require them to all invest in deep packet inspection and all this other crazy ass shit. So
basically, what they're doing is they're just trying to, because they've tried for so long to get people like the Pirate Bay or these other places to shut them down, and they can't because.
Pirate Bay is not even in the States.
Yeah, because the Pirate Bay is better than they are. but it basically they're getting frustrated and they're going, kill the messenger.
Well, yeah, they can't get the actual people running the sites to take do what they want. So now they're trying to pick somebody else that they can make responsible for it. This is a broad and rough analogy. So if it's not exactly correct, yeah, you know, don't go nuts here. But this is sort of like walking into a room, seeing somebody beat the crap out of somebody else, and realizing that because you can't beat the crap out of the guy who just beat the crap out of your friend, you go and beat up somebody else. It's just like, you know, it's like there's that guy over there by the bar who has absolutely nothing to do with, you know, the mongoloid who just beat up your friend. I'm going to go beat him up because you beat up my friend.
Because he was there.
Yeah, that's it.
And it makes you feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it makes me feel better.
Now, and it's really funny because I got the summary off of Wikipedia and they've got a big warning at the top of the article under, you know, the picture of Jimmy Wells' ass. I don't know why they've got a picture of his ass on there, but they, you know, under that, they had this big warning saying that the article might be biased. It's like, gee, I wonder why.
I'm surprised in big letters it didn't say, please do not sue us for having this up here.
Well,
now,
it's like this water thing in the EU. They can't even tell people that's why they, you know, why they're not advertising the water anymore is because of the. Has anybody else heard about that? That's not related to tech at all. But
no,
yeah, and the EU over the weekend decided that there was this big 3-year-long study that they funded that essentially determined that you cannot advertise that your bottled water, you know, helps to prevent dehydration. They're saying water does not prevent dehydration, so you can't advertise that, and you can't. You can't even explain that's why you're not advertising it. You can't, you know, like the costs associated with changing your model and shit like that. You can't say why because that's slandering the government.
That's epic. That's amazing.
Yeah, they've got some great stuff they passed over there recently.
Okay. Now, going back to this anti-piracy law, I do see a plus side kind of in a roundabout sort of way. Okay. So let's just say hypothetically it passes. Well, and it's probably not going to pass for this exact same reason. You have these huge media corporations that run ISPs, a la AT&T and Comcast. And
well, they were initially supporting it, but they've withdrawn all their support because of their customer base went up in arms.
Well, and not only that, they probably saw it and went, oh, fuck, they're going to make us liable? Well, fuck. No, we can't. No. No. What are you, retarded? Yeah. See, so we have, you know, for the first time in a really long time, I can say, well, we have corporations that are actually going to stand behind this and go, no, you can't do that, you silly, silly government.
I think we've actually got a lot of people at this point saying, no, you can't do that, because when you go searching for it, the first thing you find are not the articles explaining what SOPA is, but all the articles of all the opposition to it. So if they pass it at this point, they're asking for either riots or the next elections will be really interesting, because it'll be like, yeah, did you vote for that? You're out. I mean...
Yeah, obviously. Another thing that I can see, like you said, that this is going to do is... all those little mom and pop ISPs, like you said, they're gonna have to buy deep packet inspection
utilities.
Yeah,
they're not gonna be able to afford to stay in business.
Exactly. So the only people that are gonna be able to actually enforce this kind of shit is those big companies like Time Warner, Comcast, you know, that type of shit.
Yeah. So you're effectively putting in a minimum cost of doing business, which you know, lots of laws end up doing that, but it's gonna be pretty prohibitive to get started now as an ISP without doing this kind of filtering. And you know, sure, you're going to start out filtering for the copywritten content, but how easy would it be to subvert this and start filtering out, say, political speak you don't agree with? You know, pick your party in power, and they start filtering out the other party. I mean, or third parties that they don't particularly care for. So this is too easy to snowball. This needs to just go away.
I agree.
See, generally, the stuff that just needs to go away is shit that never does. Yeah. Like herpes.
Oh, hell. Well, I think we've about beat that horse into the ground. It's you know, you can beat the dead horse all you want, but at some point it's just a mess. So, let's see here. Of course, for promos, we've got RU's Open Mic Night, which is on Friday nights. We've got I Have Nothing every Saturday. We've got the Galaxy 15 radio site and the Twitter handle, which I forgot to tweet that the show was starting. Oops. And
tweet it now and really fuck with people.
Yeah, you know, I'm not even going to worry about it at this point. But and let's see, Mondays we've got BSV's Nameless Review Show. Am I forgetting anything? Anybody else got stuff they want to plug?
Nope, I'm good.
To not being hungover.
There you go. So, yeah, we'll just close out with some screen saver here and call it a night.
Say bye.
Bye.
I long to evolve.
screen savior. Look into the sky as it all goes away. Watching as the screen fades to black. Plugging in your brain an unrecognized device. I'm your screen savior.